Let's put that under the category of things I probably should have checked before I hit the gavel. Good evening. I've determined that a quorum is present, and therefore I call the meeting to order. My name is Michael Fee, and it's my honor to serve as moderator for this fourth night of Sudbury's annual town meeting for 2015. We have seven articles remaining, including three community preservation matters and four citizen petitions. We will have plenty of time tonight to engage in robust debate on all of these matters, but it is my sincere hope that we will be able to conclude and dissolve annual town meeting tonight. If this is your first night here, fire exits are in the rear of the hall where you entered. There's also a fire exit behind me through the stage. Bathrooms are also located across the hall and near the cafeteria. Thanks to the Boy Scout Troop 63 and our runners tonight, Colton Simon, Ethan Mossy, Tentarelli, Parker Simon, Jed Howry, Liam Houston, Emmett Alkasab, Ben Schneider, and Andrew Mossy. Thanks a lot, gentlemen, for helping out. For the benefit of the hall, the interim town manager, Marianne Bilodeau, is not able to be here tonight due to a long-standing, previously planned commitment. In her absence, I am confident that members of the Board of Selectmen, the Finance Committee, or town staff can address whatever questions might otherwise be directed to the town manager. Town Council to my left tonight from Petrini & Associates is Peter Mello. And I have a couple of notes from the town clerk. Card tonight is bright orange. There's a reason for that. They're much easier to see when you're counting votes. You got this when you checked in. It's the only one you're going to get. If you lose it, it can't be replaced. So treat it very like it's a very important piece of your town meeting experience. The town clerk also asked me to remind you that there's a special town election on May 19th. There are five ballot questions and the specimen ballot for this election, as well as information on absentee ballots, polling hours, and locations can be found on the town website, www.sudbury.ma.us, under the tab Recent News. Okay. For those of you who were here at our last session on Wednesday evening, thank you for coming back. For those of you who could not attend, well, you missed what can only be described as a glimpse into the raw inner workings of an open democratic legislative session. Debate on Article 49 was long, passionate, and filled with much well-considered commentary, including moments of real eloquence. The vote was close enough to require a standing count, and all those present endured that procedure with cooperation and good humor. In the end, there were those who were pleased and those who were disappointed by the result, but I hope everyone left the hall confident that the process we engaged in together was fair. In the interim, I've received several questions and comments about the procedural issues that arose on Wednesday night, and I'd like to just take a few minutes to talk about them before we get to Article 50. First, several people asked that I define a standing count and discuss how and when it is appropriate for a voter to call for a standing count. Article 2, Section 17 provides that, as moderator, I am authorized to determine vote tallies myself unless a count is requested in conformity with state law and the provisions of town meeting time. State law, General Laws, Chapter 39, says that if the vote determination of the moderator is questioned by seven or more voters, I am required to poll the voters or, quote, divide the meeting. In other words, I must count the vote by some method other than by my own estimation. You may recall at the initial night of town meeting, I asked that voters refrain from calling for a counted vote unless you are certain that I made a mistake. I told the hall that if there is any doubt in my mind about the correct result, I will call for a count myself. On Wednesday, the gentleman who requested the count was standing in the balcony, and he was certain, based on his perspective and observation, that I had miscalculated. One of the difficulties with counting votes in this room is that those persons sitting in even the first row of the balcony can only see about half of the floor below them. So what was reasonably apparent from my perspective, understandably seemed completely wrong from the balcony. In order to try and address this issue, what I intend to do the next time a standing vote is requested is to ask the person making the motion, as well as the 7 supporting voters, to come up to the stage and see the vote from my vantage point. If after having seen the vote from the stage, they still believe that I have miscalculated, then we'll proceed to a counted vote. You may be pleased that in the event we again find ourselves in that situation, I have since consulted with my predecessor, Myron Fox, as well as the Mass Moderators Association and their resource materials, and have devised a protocol for tallying a counted vote that I think will be more efficient and less time-consuming than what I put you through on Wednesday. The second procedural issue raised after Wednesday's vote is the concept and process of reconsideration. In Sudbury, Article 2, Section 13 of our bylaw controls, and it says that a motion to reconsider an article previously voted on in the same session, i.e. the same night, is proper and can be allowed after a vote of two-thirds of the voters. If we've adjourned, a motion to reconsider an article voted on in a previous session requires a unanimous vote of the hall, unless written notice of an intention to move for reconsideration, signed by 15 voters, is given to the town clerk by noon the day following the vote. In the event a motion to reconsider is properly made and seconded, all discussion must be confined exclusively to the merits or demerits of reconsideration. In general, the only proper reasons to seek reconsideration are that there occurred such a misstatement of fact or law in the debate, or such an error of procedure that the voters, if aware of such discrepancies, would have voted differently. In other words, it is not a proper basis for reconsideration to argue simply that the hall arrived at the wrong result. Finally, a note about points of order, because there were quite a few made on Wednesday, and it's important to understand exactly what this procedural device entails. As we all know, once recognized by the moderator, no speaker may be interrupted in any way except by a point of order. Point of order is not a motion, and it doesn't require a second or a vote. It is a question. And on a point of order, a voter can raise only 3 valid concerns. Please turn off all your cell phones. On a point of order, a voter can only raise only 3 valid concerns. Number 1, is the speaker entitled to the floor? Is the speaker a resident? Or has the speaker outlasted his or her allotted time? Number 2, is what the speaker is saying, is it inappropriate, frivolous, irrelevant, illegal? Number 3, is there some error in procedure of the pending action or motion? Those are the 3 valid bases for raising a point of order. I welcome proper points of order and will make every effort to explain the procedural issues that shape our discussions. I ask only that when exercising this parliamentary privilege, you stand, state loudly that you wish to make a point of order, and wait for me to recognize you. We'll then be able to get you a microphone and discuss your question. No voter should hesitate to rise and bring to my attention an issue that constitutes a proper point of order, because when exercised responsibly, points of order functions as a tactful hint from the voters who may see an important point of procedure that I have missed. With that, any questions? On to Article 50. Community Preservation Fund, Town Center Landscaping. Motion by Frank Reap, Sudbury Center Improvement Advisory Committee.
Is that all right?
Mr. Reap, before you start, can you state your name and address?
Frank Reap, 54 Newbridge Road. Move in the words of the article with the sum of $100,000 appropriated.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Reap.
I'm a member of the Sudbury Center Improvement Advisory Committee. This article seeks $100,000 in Community Preservation Act funds for landscaping and historic restoration for the final phase of the Sudbury Center improvement project. The funds under this article will supplement funds approved at the 2013 annual town meeting under Article 36 and will be used for site improvements to enhance the historic nature and open space qualities of the area. The landscape design plan has been under review by the Sudbury Center Improvement Advisory Committee for several months, and a public forum on this plan was held on April 21st. The plan features integration of the new park at 15 Hudson Road with Grinnell Park, expanded walkways through Grinnell Park and the town common for better public use, replacement of the ornamental street lighting, additional stone wall construction, and appropriate landscaping. The community's recorded goals and objectives for the town center project included preservation of historic cultural and natural resources in the center, and this landscape phase was anticipated as the final step in the project. The intersection project is now underway and is expected to be completed by September. The landscape phase will follow the construction. These funds are critical to completion of this project, as the allocated funds in 2013 are not adequate to finish the improvements to the level desired. The goal of this project is for the town center to become a showpiece of Sudbury's history and a vibrant and safe place for all Sudbury residents. I urge your support of this article.
Thank you, Mr. Reap. Finance Committee, Bill Nealon. Thank you very much for that comment, sir.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen, Pat Brown.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who wants to be heard on Article 50? Anyone?
Carol Wolf, 637 Concord Road. Is the money for plantings only, or fences, or stone walls, or any other permanent structures? Thank you.
Yes, the scope of the work involves grading, walkways, stone walls, plantings of trees and shrubs. That's the heart of the matter. There's also a few benches. Oh, excuse me. A very important part of it is new lighting. All of the, there's perhaps a dozen and a half street lamps throughout that the center area, which are all in a state of advanced deterioration. They will all be replaced with similarly new historically inspired equipment.
Any other questions or comments about Article 50? Right here, Mr. Tyler.
Ralph Tyler. I just had
address, please.
1 Deacon Lane, Sudbury. They said it's on. Is this better? Yes, sorry. I had a question. Will most of this money be spent in areas that are sufficiently far from the roadway so that if Sudbury decides after they've endured the traffic delays that they're not being fixed by this project to expand, you know, to put another lane, let's say, in there, are we going to basically end up destroying half of this money, or is this, you know, plan that there'll probably be a further movement to actually do something about the delays in that intersection?
Mr. Reap, do you understand the question?
I think so. This project has been perhaps 7 years in the planning, very detailed planning involving various components, user groups in the community. Everything involved in a project like this represents compromises, which is to say, how much roadway is to be built versus how much green space and walkways and everything else. How much of the original landscape is to be preserved and how much of it is to be disturbed. Accordingly, the plan is presumed to be final, and we do not expect to be widening roadways at any point within our lifetimes.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to be heard under Article 50? Anyone else wish to be heard? I see no one. We'll proceed to a vote. This requires a majority. All those in favor of passing the motion under Article 50, raise your cards. Thank you. All opposed? The motion passes nearly unanimously and by well more than a majority. Thank you, Mr. Reeb. Article 51, Community Preservation Fund, amend Article 26. Motion by Jim Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Jim Hill, 199 Concord Road. I'm the Vice Chair of the Sudbury Historical Commission.
Mr. Hill, we need to start with a motion, please.
Move in the words of the article.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Hill.
We're here today to amend Article 26 of the 2012 town meeting. The Historical Commission in that town meeting was approved to proceed with the installation of a water-based fire suppression system at Sudbury's Hosmer House. Information is up on the board. The problem with using a water-based system, and that was the best system at the time, but the problem with using it is with one type of system, you'll save the paintings, but you'll lose the house. And with the other system, you'll lose the paintings, but save the house. And we were looking to do both. So we met with Jim Kelly and Mark Herwick, and they brought a different solution to us. The new system is a very advanced fire smoke detection system that does a continual sniffing of the air, and it can tell typically days in advance of any type of a fire system, a fire or wiring that's about to go bad. It's being used in many museums throughout the country. In particular, it's being used out in Nantucket. We went down, or members of our committee went down and met with people in Nantucket, and they spoke very highly of the system. They've had very few faults, and they feel it helps preserve all their artifacts very well. So we're looking to switch, and we're asking the town meeting to allow us to switch to this new system. And we're not looking to appropriate any additional money tonight. We have $50,000 that was designated for the water-based system to start with this system. And then in a year or two, we expect to put in a second phase of the system, which will complete the entire house. Historical Commission asks for your support of this article, and thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Finance Committee, Bill Nealon.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Board of Selectmen, Pat Brown.
Board of Selectmen support this article.
Okay, who wishes to be heard on Article 51? Any questions or comments regarding Article 51? Oh, thank you.
Neil Drawers, 15 Colonial Road. So if I understand correctly, you want to use $50,000 in the first phase, but there'll be another request for money to finish it up.
Yes, sir.
What do you expect the cost to be for the second phase?
At this point, we're expecting about the same amount, $50,000.
And if that doesn't get appropriated, does that mean that the $50,000 we spent on the first phase negates the safety of the building?
No, it doesn't. What it will do is the main thing we're going to do is cover the first two floors of the building, as well as the area near the heating system and the electrical panels. And the second, as we get experience with the system and make sure it's what, you know, exactly works and get all the bugs worked out of it, if there are any, would then be to look to expand it to the rest of the building.
Okay, anyone else wish to be heard on Article 51? Raise your card and let me know if I'm looking at you and I can't see you. Okay, right here, sir.
Kurt Larson, 95 Water Row. You're looking to replace what we appropriated for in a fire suppression system, being water sprinkler based, with a fire detection system. I don't believe the fire detection system you're asking for funds for will put a fire out.
It won't.
So when a fire occurs, what's the fire department going to use to put the fire out?
Well, yes, but they'll localize. The fire department will be able to localize much easier than the fire suppression system. This system, typically, you have two types of systems now. When the heat finally gets up to the rooftop or the ceiling level of a water suppression system, you already have damage. This is to alert the fire department prior to there being any damage.
So the fire department is alerted, but nobody is putting the fire out yet. The fire
department
still has to get there to put the fire out with
water.
Wait. One at a time.
Let me finish
this question, and then you can answer.
Yeah. So I really don't see what the trade-off is here, because there will still be water damage if we have a fire.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Mr. Hill, any further comments?
Yes. The system should alert the fire department before there is a fire. And that's the whole basis of the system. It's being used. The system came out of the telecommunications industry, where they have racks and racks of computers. And what happens is they were able to develop the system so it would sniff out days before a transistor would burn out, because it would change in the atmosphere. So they were able to go in and replace that board without having any type of damage or downtime. The system has then grown and is now being used throughout museums for the exact same reason, is that it will alert prior to a fire. We already have a fire system or fire detection system at this time, but this is that much more delicate, and it's so much newer technology that many of your historic buildings are going in this route.
Okay. Anyone else wish to be heard on the motion under Article 51? Yes, sir. Mr. Coe.
Robert Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I was all set to vote for this, but this is starting to get squishy. The transistors burning out are not what's going to happen in the Hosmer House in all probability. How did the jump get made from a system that detects transistors getting ready to burn out in a rack of computers to the ability to detect all the various things that can start a fire in a place like the Hosmer House?
Do you understand the question?
Yes, I do.
Please.
To give you an example, sir, if there was something wrong with the refrigerator, for example, and that was about to burn out and that could cause a fire, this would pick that up prior to that happening. It would be the same thing with the electrical circuits. With the Hosmer House, two of the biggest issues that we have to be concerned about is fire from outside, and then typically either electrical fire or something from the oil burner. So these should detect, the system is known to detect prior to it actually being a fire, and therefore the fire department would be notified in advance and we could address the issue, and it would locate where that information is coming from, so we would have a target of where we could go again prior to a fire happening.
Okay. Anyone else on Article 51? Where? Oh, thank you. Right here.
Kathy Jacob, 3280 Lancaster Road. You said that this is very good for electrical and things like that, wearing out. What about lightning? What about Molotov cocktails or something like that that's an act of nature or vandalism or something?
Mr. Hill?
Absolutely, those things could happen, and you know, there is that potential, but we are literally a couple hundred yards away from the fire department, And we've had a conversation with them, and they feel comfortable of not having a water system in there isn't really going to stop anything from a situation such as that vandalism or getting hit by lightning, for example. That would be something that was external, and therefore the house would already be on fire prior to a water-based system going off anyway.
Okay. Anything else on Article 51? Gentleman in the second row.
What happens if...
Excuse me. Name and address, please.
Bruce Langmuir, 9 Bentbrook Road.
Can you say that one more time?
Bruce Langmuir, 9 Bentbrook Road.
Thank you.
What happens if there's too much snow for the fire department to get there?
Fortunately, being right in town center, we don't think that that's as big a risk. Again, if it was to get hit by lightning and it was too much snow for the fire department to get there, you would lose the house anyway.
Okay, I believe there's a gentleman right behind you, third row. Sir?
Alan Wallach, 67 Thompson Drive. Just one question. Does the fire department fully support this proposal?
Is Chief Miles here? Don't believe so. Anyone able to speak for the fire department? Mr. Hill, do you know the fire department's position on this?
Yes, I spoke to Chief Mills myself, as well as Jim Kelly, who brought it to our attention, as well as Mark, who's building inspector, and everyone was in support of the system.
Okay, there's a woman in the middle here. Yes, please. Can we get her a mic?
Rebecca Chizza, Whitetail Lane, 21.
Sorry, can you say that one more time, please?
21 Whitetail Lane, Rebecca Chizza. The question I have is, what would the loss for the town be if we lost Hosmer and all of Dorothy Hosmer's materials and painting? Do you have an idea?
Do you know?
I'm not sure. Are you asking financially or emotionally?
Right. Well, isn't it a town asset? It is a town asset, right? And all the contents.
Yes,
so
it is.
So I wonder if you have an evaluation of it.
An appraisal? Do you want to know what the financial value of it is? Okay.
Yes, please.
Do you have an idea?
I think it would be a fair estimate based on the appraisals we have of the paintings as well as the value of a house in the center of town there, maybe $2.5 million.
So it's a lot more than the cost of the
yes,
equipment.
Yes, it is.
Okay, anyone else on Article 51? Okay, there's a gentleman right here.
Yes, good evening. Harold Cutler, 163 Landham Road. I am a fire protection engineer with 40 years' experience in this field. You may also know that I have been a call firefighter for the town of Sudbury for 50 years until I retired in January. I've worked with Jim and the committee on this, and I have to rise tonight and disagree with their analysis of the situation. Automatic sprinklers put water on fires without the help of any intervention by the fire department. The system they're calling for is a great system. I'm familiar with it. It could sense fires when things are overheating. That's what happens. They get overheated. They give off enough gases, ionized gases, that these systems will detect it. A fire starting as a cooking fire on the stove, for example, or perhaps from some of these other causes, such as lightning, really aren't going to be detected prematurely. There's going to be open flaming, and there may be rapid fire development. The fire department in Sudbury has great capability, but they're not always readily available in the numbers that you'd need to fight a fire within a building. In advancing a line is a minimum of two men in the building and two in out. That's the rule, two in, two out. And that's not always available when the fire department is out on a medical call or at other incidents. So I'm not convinced that this is the solution for Hosmer House. There are many, many museums utilizing automatic sprinkler systems or variations on them, such as the pre-action sprinkler system, which detects the fire first but doesn't put any water on the fire till things start to get hot. And that's probably a better arrangement than this, because if the fire department's tied up, they will not get there, but the system will react and put water on the fire. That's the ultimate objective, putting water on the fire. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cutler. There's a gentleman in the second row in the baseball cap. Can we get him a mic, please?
John Seeger, 26.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time, please? It's on. Can you just say your name and address one more time, please? It's on. Your mic's on.
A fire sprinkler head.
Excuse me, sir.
Can
I just get your name and address again, please?
John Seeger at 26 Whispering Pine Road.
Thank you.
A sprinkler head can dump water on a flame. A sprinkler head cannot tell 2 days before that you're in danger of having a flame, and a sprinkler head cannot go fix the refrigerator so that you avoid the situation altogether. What it can do is ruin artwork, furniture, and frequently construction.
Thank you, sir. Anyone else wish to be heard under Article 51? I see no one. Let's move to a vote. This requires a majority in order to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 51, raise your cards. All those opposed? It passes by well more than a majority. Article 52, Community Preservation Fund, General Budget and Appropriations. Chairman of the CPC, Chris Morley.
Move to appropriate the sums as recommended by the Community Preservation Committee in the following Community Preservation Budget for FY16 Community Preservation Surtaxes: $90,000 administrative and operating costs, $1,279,729 in debt service, and further to reserve the following funds: $106,860 for historic reserves.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Morley.
Each year, this last CPA article is the place where we do what the town financial staff needs us to do after voting on the previous articles, allocating CPA monies to their rightful accounts. You see here an estimate for administrative expenses of $90,000. The second line item is the annual debt service on monies that we've borrowed to purchase land over the years. And lastly, this year we did not spend the minimum 10% of that statute requires that we either spend or set aside for historic preservation. This $106,860 is that set aside. We did spend 10% or more on the other two 10% categories, open space and affordable housing. I'd like to thank the Hall again for your support of the CPA and SEBRE program, and thank all of the volunteers on my committee, some of whom put out fires, and others, as well as the dedicated town staff whose efforts we rely upon so much. Thank you and good night from us.
Thanks, Chris. Bill Nealon for the FinCom.
The Finance Committee unanimously recommends approval of this article.
Pat Brown.
Board of Selectmen supports this article.
Discussion. Who wishes to be heard on Article 52? Anyone wish to be heard on Article 52? Yell out if I'm looking at you and I can't see you. Okay, I see no one who wants to be heard on Article 52. Let's vote. It's a majority. All those in favor of the motion under the article, raise your cards. All opposed? It passes nearly unanimously and well in excess of the majority required. Article 53, town sidewalks. This is a non-binding resolution. You may recall in the past that non-binding resolutions were not debated. I've elected to modify that rule slightly, and Mr. DePompei and I have discussed the fact that I would allow him 10 minutes for a presentation, and then we will have some limited period of debate afterwards. I would urge the hall to remember that because this is a non-binding resolution, and we still have several articles to go, that we should state our opinions succinctly and briefly, and give the selectmen and others who are interested in this issue a sense of the hall without us taking a tremendous amount of time to do it. So, Mr. DePompei for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to prioritize the current building of sidewalks to provide walking access to public schools for all homes within 2 miles of a public school. Please note...
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. DePompei, you have 10 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Please note that's a change to what you have in the warrant. In the warrant, there was a second sentence. The second sentence involves some finance. As it turns out, we need to separate priority and finance. So tonight we're going to talk about priority. If this goes ahead, next year we'll talk about finance. Okay, so how do we currently build sidewalks? Sudbury currently has three defining documents. We have the 2000, we've been building sidewalks for about 35 years. The current defining documents are the 2001 master plan, the report of the walking committee, which is also has a 2001 date on it, and the planning and priority initiative, which was written sometime between 2001 and today, probably in the 2007 timeframe. What does it say in the master plan? The master plan, many of the older established neighborhoods are in need of walkways. Pedestrian safety is a very important issue. The town must be proactive. That's the key word. The town must be proactive in constructing walkways to avoid traffic accidents. And lastly, it says, we're to complete the town walkway program by appropriating funds annually to construct walkways. What did the walking committee report in 2001? The walking committee basically followed all the elements of the 2001 master plan. It also indicated Sudbury has an urgent need for 16 miles of new walkways at a cost of about $2.8 million. Building these walkways will benefit all citizens of Sudbury. The walkways that they cited were walkways specifically to create walking routes to schools, public facilities, and recreational fields. They did this to reduce the risk in the high traffic areas where they felt pedestrian safety was an issue. So what they did in this plan was they came up with a list of 29 walkways, 15 of which were listed as high priority walkways and approved by the police, the Sudbury Police, as being high priority walkways. Here's a chart that shows our progress. I'll call this cut and paste. Actually, I used scissors and a crayon to put it together. And there's one more sheet to this. This shows about the first two-thirds of the list. Everywhere you see a red X is a sidewalk that was listed as a priority that we haven't made any progress on. Where you see a yellow X, it means we have made progress, but we haven't completed it. Where you see a green, it means we have completed the sidewalk that was listed on this 2001 list. So basically, the sidewalks are listed on your right. Our progress is listed on the left, and this is 14 years worth of progress. This is the second sheet, basically showing the same thing. Okay, if you take all that data and roll it up into two sentences, what does it say? It says of the 15 top priority locations, those were the ones that had black diamonds on them and were determined by the police to be the most important sidewalks in Sudbury. Five have been completed, one is partially completed, and nine remain as they were in 2001. If you look at all 29 locations, all of which are priority, but the first 15 were high priority, basically our progress is nine have been completed, four are partially completed, and 16 of those areas remain without sidewalks. What is our current initiative? Well, our current initiative basically says our policy is we build sidewalks by popular demand. So what that means is if a neighborhood wants a sidewalk, they get together, they get approvals from the neighbors, they put a petition together, they come to the planning department, and they sit down and talk with Bill Place, and it gets put on a priority list at Department of Public Works. That priority listing has nothing to do with the 2001 priority listing that was approved by the police department. The police, as far as I know, or the fire department, is not part of the current priority planning. Of the current priority listing under the priority initiative, there are 5 sidewalks, only 2 of which show up on the original high priority list. So what am I saying is the way forward? I'm saying we need to reestablish the priorities of the master plan and the walking report. We need to include the schools and the police in our discussions for the priority listing. We need to reprioritize the planning and priority initiative to comply with the true priority and needs for sidewalks in Sudbury. When we were talking about the CPA article to provide the $100,000 for sidewalks, someone commented that the school track team doesn't run on the sidewalks. This picture was taken today. The school track team does run on the sidewalks. When you get right down to it, it's really all about the children's safety. What I'm proposing, which is just simply to sit down and reprioritize this, look at it, look at our priorities again, do it in accordance with the master plan and the sidewalk plan. It fully supports the master plan. What we're discussing fully supports the report of the walking committee. It fully supports the new Sudbury Public School initiative of bike your way to school on Fridays. We have a lot of neighborhoods that can neither walk nor bicycle to school, and some of them live on the same street as the schools. I've talked to both the transportation coordinator at Sudbury Public Schools, and I've talked to Parks and Grounds at Lincoln Sudbury Regional High School. They would love to participate in a sidewalk program. So I'm asking that you vote yes for Article 53. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. DePompei. Mark Manassian for the FinCom.
Finance Committee unanimously supports this article.
Board of Selectmen, Chairman Woodard.
The Selectmen supported this article by a vote of 3-2.
Discussion. Who would like to be heard on Article 53? You have 2 people over here, conveniently. Ms. Deutsch, would you like to start us off?
I'm Judy Deutsch from Concord Road, 41 Concord Road. I'd actually like some clarification. I think earlier in your presentation, Mr. Pompei, you said something, you talked about reports that talked about walkways, and then you talk about sidewalks. Now, number one, I want to know if you see a difference between walkways and sidewalks. I was told more than 40 years ago that the difference was that walkways could be used by bicycles and sidewalks couldn't. I don't know if that's true anymore. I'd like to know what the situation is. I'd also like to know, because I don't see any cement sidewalks like they put in Maynard, which I assume is much poorer than Sudbury. I see asphalt walkways that crack and break, etc. And, of course, cement does too. So I would like some clarification, please.
Thank you. Mr. DePompei, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Thank you for asking that question. Actually, I've been using the terms interchangeably, sidewalk and walkways. However, you're precisely correct. I was here 35 years ago when we started this, and the whole purpose was to have sidewalks that could be used for bicycles. And as I understand current policy in Sudbury, and I'll look for one of our officials for official help here, but it is permissible to use sidewalks on the asphalt sidewalks that we currently provide in Sudbury. Does that answer your question?
Okay, there was a gentleman sitting next to you. Just
Don Charles Booberhill Lane. one of those senior moments, I'm afraid. Can you get back to me?
Sure, no problem. Who else would like to be heard on Article 53?
Mike.
Sorry? Where?
Mike.
Oh, sorry. Chairman Woodard.
I was just going to ask if we could have the assistant town planner who's here tonight just explain how the town does prioritize the building of sidewalks. I think that might be useful perspective. Would that be all
right? Sure. Jim?
Hey guys, Jim Kupfer, Assistant Town Planner. Much of what Dan has said is fairly accurate. So our 2001 walkway plan does set our priorities. And from there, we have checked over those many years. We've checked down the line of those walkways that we can complete. Bill has done a great job with DPW and working with the neighborhoods to do that. Those boxes that you see that are red are likely from several different constraints. And I'll say this again and again. When you're looking to do sidewalks, you have two constraints here in town. Wetlands, as you all know, wetlands throughout town. Wetlands is one of the biggest constraints. And then the second is easements. We have very narrow roads, and we'll need, for almost every sidewalk, we'll need easements from every one of you to do a sidewalk. So those red boxes, those are areas where we could start our sidewalk, but have a 50-foot gap here, a 50-foot gap there, 180-foot gap there. So in many of those instances, we are holding off until we do receive those easements. And Dan is correct in the fact that we work with each of the neighborhoods to then, the ones that we can't do right now while we wait on easements or they have wetland issues, we ask for the neighborhoods that are excited about sidewalks to come and petition for those sidewalks. Now, we do prioritize for those near schools. We do prioritize, let's see, I have some of the listed here, proximity to schools as well as proximity to public facilities, safety considerations, proximity to Route 20, environmentally feasible, and then of course, costs always comes down to cost. So you are correct in many of those assertions, but I will say those that are in the red are likely due to easement concerns or wetland constraints. But if you do petition for a priority that's not on that 2001 walkway plan, you then come to the planning board, which they hold a public hearing and can add that to the priority list if the priority or the planning board so deems. To the last public forum in which we did a walkway forum was 2011. The planning board hosted that. It might be time to do another.
Okay, let's just take a couple more. Mrs. Coe, did you have something you wanted to say?
Martha Coe, 14 Churchill Street. I was a highway commissioner in the early days of the walkway program, and there's some things I think people should know. Apparently the story still is around that if we build these walkways, we're going to get state aid if we'd have the kids walk instead of going on the school bus. In the early days, I'd say about 5 years after we were building the first walkways, somebody at town meeting said, when are we going to get this state aid? And nobody knew. About 2 or 3 weeks later, there was a letter to the editor in all the three papers we had at that time from the planning board that said, no one knows how this story got started, but there is no state aid for walkways for the kids to walk to school. And as far as I know, that statement has never been refuted.
Okay. So,
now, the other thing is, as a highway commissioner, this, you know, if you're going to have the kids walk to school every day, they're not just going to walk to school on a beautiful day like today. They are going to walk to school when it's raining, when it's snowing, and it's very hard to plow the walkways. We had an awful problem with the walkway plow breaking down. And so... You're not, the walkways are not going to be available. I mean, I don't remember seeing any walkway available this winter. We were lucky to be able to put the pile of snow there. And so if you're going to legislate that the kids have to walk, you've got a problem. When my kids were in the junior high, the guidance counselor said that one child in three, grades K to 8 in Sudbury, was in a single-parent home. Now, how is a poor single parent who is trying to make ends meet, take care of the kids, do everything, how is that person, you're going to put a burden on that person to drive kids to school? Then you have another thing that happened a couple of years ago. A bear was sighted at the corner of Fairbank and Camperdown Lane. A bear was sighted at the corner of Hudson Road and Saxony Drive. And a bear was sighted at Feely Park, all within about 3 days of each other. Do you want little kids walking to school under those conditions? So I think the
just a minute, Mrs. Coe.
Yeah.
Please give Mrs. Coe the courtesy of being quiet while she's speaking.
Okay.
Can you wrap it up, please?
Yes. What I'm saying is that I support the article, but I do not. I want to be sure people understand that building these walkways because of schools probably isn't a good idea. If you want, we build it for the other reasons we want them.
Thanks. Okay. Before we move on, if the only people that should be standing are me, the Boy Scouts, and the officers in the back, everybody else should take a seat. So if you're standing back here or over here, there's plenty of nice, juicy seats right here in the middle. Good viewing. So please take a seat as soon as you can. Okay. Now, remember, this is a non-binding article. And Mr. DePompei has spoken for about 8 minutes. We've had about 5 or 6 minutes of commentary. I'll take a few more comments, but I'd really like to move on to the binding articles as soon as we can. So I'm going to take I'm going to take this gentleman right here. Yes, you, sir. I'm going to take Mr. Morley. I'm going to take Mr. Tyler, and then we're going to call it a day.
Tom Holliker, 623 Concord Road. I intend to vote against this measure, partly on the basis of the issues raised by Ms. Coe, and on the basis of the fact that it's much too narrow. It focuses exclusively on the use of walkways for schools. Access to schools. But there are other reasons for building walkways. Walkways connect other walkways and other areas. They should connect public buildings. They should connect shopping areas and so on. And I find this article basically silly as it stands.
Thank you, sir. Can we get a mic to Mr. Morley right here in the front, please?
Thank you.
Please stand up.
Yes, sorry. two things. The first one is I'm just curious if the Finance Committee and the Selectmen received financial information about the estimated cost of this program and what that was based on before they voted yes. And secondly, I do want to adamantly say that a sidewalk and a walkway are not the same thing. And I don't believe people in Sudbury want sidewalks.
Do you have a specific question that you're identifying?
Yes. How much is this going to cost?
To whom are you directing that question?
That would either be the planning office or the DPW.
Okay. Mr. Kupfer, do you have any information on that?
Thank you. So, yes, we did do a rough estimate of, to do approximately 90 miles of new walkways at a cost of $50 a linear foot for a total cost of $23 million.
Okay. Mr. Tyler?
Well, Ralph Tyler, Deacon Lane. First of all, I don't think Mr. DePompei is talking about 90 miles, so we can kind of forget about that estimate. I think he's talking about the priority walkways. I happen to live on one of the lanes or one of the areas that's supposed to be a priority walkway. No one has ever come and asked me to give them an easement for my front yard. So as a first cut, they should go to identify which houses will not give easements on those priority walkways. That should be done within a month, and then some discussions can be had. You can target then who the people are and then make some decisions. But this is a very important thing, and it's important, I think, that we think about this as a priority to get it done, to bond it while interest rates are very low, and then build it out quickly, and then pay for it while some of us are still alive. We heard before that in, I think it was 13 years, they built about few of these walkways, and I think I said there was an estimate that might be 20 years at this rate that we're building the walkways just to finish these priority ones. Well, I think we should do better than that, and I know that Sudbury can do better than that, and I commend Dan for bringing this forward to get our attention back.
Thank you, Mr. Tyler. I'll take one more comment, but there's a requirement. You cannot have spoken previously. Right here.
Julie Rube, 21 Saddle Ridge. I just wanted to clarify some things. So somebody mentioned that they made it sound like people aren't already walking to school. Well, it's already a rule that if you're within 2 miles of a school, you either walk or pay extra money. So when I went to school here, I walked a lot because otherwise you pay extra money to take the bus. So that's already an issue. And then just another thing is I actually was on track and cross country throughout high school and in middle school. And so the reason people don't run on the sidewalks sometimes is because there aren't sidewalks. So if there are sidewalks, people will run on them. And we had all kinds of, because it's dangerous. There were, every year, it would be brought up multiple times. You need to run as close to the right side as you can. Only two people next to each other, so you can't get hit by a car. So there were a lot of efforts to make it safer because there wasn't a safe place to run. And also, if people are training, like, you're going to be running no matter if it's rainy, if it's dark, if there are bad conditions, and especially when there are bad conditions, it would be nice to have a sidewalk to run on so you don't get hit by a car.
Thank you. Okay, I think we have a fair cross-section of opinion on your non-binding article. One more minute.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. First of all, this is a non-binding resolution. There is no money, repeat, no money involved in this resolution other than the money that's currently being assigned to the community through the Community Preservation Act.
Okay, on to a vote. This requires a majority vote to pass. All those in favor of the motion under Article 53, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? That passes by well more than a majority.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. DePompei. Article 54. Article 54 is entitled Engineering and Construction of a Completed Greenway-Style Multi-Use Recreational Trail in Abandoned Rail Right-of-Way of the Framingham and Lowell Railroad, now known as the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. Mr. Sullivan, for a motion.
Thank you. My name is Andrew Sullivan.
Mr. Sullivan, please start with a motion.
I move in the words of the article.
No, I think you have to read it.
Okay, sure. Article 54, Engineering and Construction.
No, I've read that already. Now you need to read where it starts. Move.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator.
Okay.
Move to appropriate the sum of $1 million for the purpose of engineering and construction of a completed, unpaved, greenway-style, multi-use recreational rail trail in the abandoned right-of-way of the Framingham and Lowell Railroad, now known as the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, running from the Chiswick Park entrance at Union Avenue to the Concord Town Line, to be raised by taxation and contingent upon the approval of Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with General Law C-59-21C. 1.5, it looks like.
Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Sullivan, for a presentation.
Thank you. My name is Andrew Sullivan. Our residence is at 28 French Road, and I am the president and founder of Sudbury Greenways. So Article 54, a greenway in the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. Here you can see two maps of our abandoned right-of-way that runs north-south in town. You can see it's It starts, this the part that we own anyway, the part that's south of Route 20 is owned by CSX still. Heading north, it crosses Old Lancaster, Hudson Road, and a number of other roads as it heads towards the Concord Line, and you can kind of get two different looks at those maps there. This is an example of what we're talking about building. It is a 10-foot wide rolled stone dust path, beg your pardon. This one is built in Danvers. It was done with no engineering. It was simply done effectively for free by Iron Horse, which is a nonprofit contractor. The town got some DCR funds for the stone dust, and they got a free trail. It did wind up with some rutting issues and so forth, but they still had a very usable trail, and hopefully ours won't run into those issues with all the engineering attached to it. So rail trails, why are they tremendous community assets? Improved quality of life and promotion of healthy living and outdoor recreation, certainly increased pedestrian mobility connecting all our various important areas of town. We're able to leverage our existing sidewalk, which we were talking about a little bit earlier. And certainly most studies are showing that real estate values will benefit both our residential real estate values as well as the viability of our commercial tax base. So what is this Greenway Trail? There's been a lot of questions in terms of what does a trail look like, what are the specs, how is it different from a paved trail. Stone dust greenways are recreational trails, and they're trails that we can build now, starting this year and complete next year, and when engineered correctly, we think they can be a tremendous high-quality asset to the community. A couple important points. They'll be built to Mass DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, best practices for rails-to-trails projects. They will be Americans with Disabilities Act compliant. They will have safe road crossings. They will be permitted by the Sudbury CONCOM and built in compliance and through the regulations of our town bylaws. The finished product will be a 10-foot wide rolled stone dust trail with flexible 2-foot shoulders, grass shoulders, and pedestrian bridges. When I mean flexible, in most spaces, they will be 2 feet shoulders. However, if there's a large and expensive object or rock or whatever it is that would have to get moved to get an extra foot or something like that, we would choose not to move it and to save the money. So why are towns converting their abandoned right-of-ways into stone dust greenways? It's highly cost-effective and near-term. You can get a completed trail by the end of the following year. We're able to use the salvage value to reduce the overall construction time and costs. So there's an element of reduce, reuse, recycle there, certainly. The ability to leverage design, build, construction, which reduces time and costs. And an example of this going on right now is in the town of Wayland, where they just approved funding for the exact same type of trail on their portion of the Mass Central. They use the exact same estimating process that Sudbury Greenways has come to you with tonight. So greenways now, paved bike paths later, absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that, and that's certainly always been the position of Sudbury Greenways. We simply feel as though that a stone dust greenway now would allow for today's children and today's seniors to be able to use the trail in the short term. So what do we have going on? We're pursuing a paved bike path in the Bruce Freeman right-of-way, right? We funded a 25% design study, which will be done in 2016. We have several years of more funds for those design studies and several more years of design study work. MassDOT has said they will likely start the project in late 22, early 23. That was in the Crier recently. So we're talking about probably somewhere a little bit short of a decade to have a paved path. Is this funded? Absolutely not. The MassDOT Project Review Committee has recently accepted this project for initiation into the MassDOT process. However, funding certainly isn't secure. So what we're saying is, while we go out and secure funding and certainly continue to work towards a paved path, why not get a usable trail for the community now? More from the town crier. March 25th, a state review committee approves eventual funding of the trail. Quoting from a MassDOT spokesman, much more work needs to be done before the state can say with certainty when the project would be awarded funding. The project is at its earliest stages of development. So the big question here tonight is that enough progress for you? We've been talking about this trail for 20 years. Now we're talking about a completed trail in another 10 years. Do you want to wait? And if you do, certainly we respect that position. A little bit of economic backdrop. Boston Globe in February. Massachusetts has a likely $1.5 billion budget shortfall coming this year. The Baker administration is faced with difficult choices. a $283 billion federal deficit last year. So we were able to move forward north of town with the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail because of some interesting funding capabilities that came through that were able to be delivered by our legislators, about $1.6 million, which really moved forward those projects in Acton and Concord. Unfortunately, there's nothing like that right now being talked about. We will have to come up with all the additional funds for design study costs. So can Subway do it? Are we allowed to build a greenway in the Mass Central? Absolutely. Here's 2 points. Sudbury has a letter dated May 1st from the Rails Division saying we can use the steel salvage value and we can build whatever trail we'd like. That's from Deputy Rail Administrator John Ray. We'll produce a engineering estimate saying that we can do it for a reasonable cost and we can do it with a tight estimate. That's the most important thing. This particular engineering firm competed for the Mass DOT 25% design study in the Bruce Freeman. They've been out there. They've done enough due diligence to make an actual bid for a different type of trail. They're extremely familiar with the right-of-way. Here's the conceptual cost estimate. I'll spend just a minute with it. There's 17 major line items. CONCOM hearings and NOI are important. Safe road crossings are another important one, and as well the bridge work. I'm going right down to the survey work and the contingency, which is important for things like potentially a new culvert that might need to be fixed or repaired. What is a conceptual cost estimate? There's been a lot of discussion on this in social media, and I think it's important to understand what it is and what it is not. A conceptual cost estimating is defined as the forecast of projected costs that is performed before any significant amount of information is available from detailed design and with incomplete work scope definition with the purpose of using it as a basis for important project decisions like go, no go, and the appropriation of funds decisions. So I don't think that we're too far ahead of ourselves in terms of basing our initial investigation and our initial funding considerations on a conceptual cost estimate. So how do we get here, and how do we get to the point where we're just pursuing a Mass DOT-style trail? Back in late 2012, it seemed like the Greenway made sense to a lot of committees here in town. This is from a memo from our conservation group, from Jody Kaplak, Bill Place, and Debbie Dineen. A Greenway in Sudbury is likely to be permitted and will significantly reduce environmental impact and cost. Then we have the Mass DOT engineer that was at this meeting actually suggesting that Sudbury might want to build a greenway instead, that the compliance with our local bylaws might be too difficult in terms of the paved trail. So what happened here? That's my question. We've got this letter. We've got our committees and our staff saying, well, maybe we should build a greenway, but we're getting something different. To go further, 10 months later, midsummer of 13, when I started to follow this issue, the Rail Trail Concepts Committee produced a number of benefits talking about why Greenway Trail. And their ultimate recommendation to the Board of Selectmen at the time was to build a greenway. Suddenly, during that period and over the next 18 to 24 months, we were set on a 10-year-plus path for a paved bike path. And we never got the opportunity to discuss which path and which time horizon was going to be associated with the trail of the community's choice, and that's what we have the opportunity to discuss and decide tonight. So $157 per trail, a capital exclusion based on the $658,000 average assessed value would lead to a one-time $157 tax increase, one time. So the big question to me is, do you think your property value will go up more than $157 that you invest in this project? I'll quote a Rails to Trails Conservancy white paper. Where trails have been prioritized, surrounding communities have benefited greatly from economic, quality of life, health, accessibility, and mobility improvements. In national surveys, consumers have repeatedly chosen trails and walkability as desired neighborhood amenities, boosting local real estate values. So my question is, what are we waiting for? Why aren't we doing both? It's a good investment. So, perfect is the death of progress. That's not a Voltaire quote. It's some variation of it, but that's kind of how I've felt here for the last 18 months as I've tried to move this through the various channels. There's no doubt that thin-wheeled road bikes perform better on a stone dust trail. I'm not saying that they don't.
How much more time do you need?
2 minutes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Are stone dust paths good for rollerblades or skateboarders? No, they're not. There's no doubt about that. Will the bridges be upgraded to transportation standards? No, there's a huge cost to do so. All emergency vehicles can approach from a different direction. Are they extremely expensive to keep up, and do they rot all the time? We found no information to that effect, and any maintenance is fairly minimal. In no way would producing a greenway-style trail in the Bruce Friedman preclude us from upgrading it to a paved path roughly 10 years from now. We would certainly expect that to happen. So I think you're really looking at a 10-year investment here if everything works out on the MassDOT bike path. Here's a great picture that I thought I'd share with a number of disabled folks enjoying the greenway. I think certainly getting around. This is a stone dust trail, and it looks like that may be a service group there with a number of individuals. Here's a great picture of a team of thin-wheeled road bikers on a stone dust path. While I absolutely understand you cannot move at a high speed in a road bike, you can absolutely use a road bike on a stone dust path. So thank you very much. I hope you'll please consider voting yes for Article 54.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mr. Manassian for the FinCom.
The Finance Committee did not support this article. The vote was 1 in favor, 5 opposed, and 2 abstaining. The majority of the committee felt that since the MassDOT paved trail is planned for this north-south corridor, that spending the money now would not be prudent.
Okay, Mr. Woodard for this Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen did not support this article by a vote of 2-1 with 1 abstention.
Thank you, sir. Who has the point of order? Can you stand? I'm sorry. Wait a minute. Just a minute. Ms. Gossels for the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee.
Jamie Gossels, 11 Spiller Circle, a member of the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. The Capital Improvement Advisory Committee also voted not to support Article 54 by a vote of 0 in favor, 4 opposed, and 1 abstention. Like the Finance Committee, the CIAC believes it would not be sensible to fund a recreation trail along the Bruce Friedman Rail Trail since a state-funded paved trail along this route is already in progress. Further, the committee didn't support funding 2 design-build trails, referring to Articles 54 and 55, simultaneously.
Thank you. Okay. Who has the point of order? Please stand.
Don Charles, Boober Hill Lane. This time I remembered what I'm going to say. This article, as well as the next one, I understand, will also be the topics for the election next week. What is the relationship between
Wait a minute. Do you have a point of order? Do you have a question about the procedure?
No,
is this just a general debate issue that you're raising
now?
No,
it's a point of order. I mean,
I'm not understanding your question. Could you rephrase it?
If this were to pass now and fail later or the other way around, what would that mean?
Okay. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. I apologize. Would you like to address that?
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, Peter Mello, Petrini & Associates, and I want to say that this is my first appearance before town meeting. It's a pleasure and really an honor to represent the town, so happy to be here. I think this vote, and I think this is more along the lines of a question rather than a point of order, but I'm happy to address it. The vote, the way the motion's worded, it's contingent upon a favorable vote on the ballot question.
So, Mr. Charles, if it doesn't pass on the ballot, then it's dead. Does that answer your question?
If it doesn't pass here, will it be on the ballot next week?
It will appear on the ballot. But the ballots are already printed. But if it doesn't pass here, a yes or no vote on the ballot will have no force or effect. Am I correct with that, Town Council? It has to pass on both. Correct. It has to pass on both in order to go into effect.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Yes, sir. What have we got?
When the selectmen reported their vote, they said Two in favor, one against, and one abstained. We have five selectmen. Where's the fifth vote?
That's not a proper point of order. Anything else on a point of order?
My apologies.
Thank you, sir. Do you have a proper point of order, Mr. Stein? Okay, anyone else with a point of order? Okay, let's discuss this, please. Anyone wish to be heard on the motion under Article 54? This gentleman right here.
Michael Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. You've kind of glossed over the maintenance issues of this kind of surface. I have used these trails, rail trails from Montreal down to Virginia. Several of them have been this stone dust type of surface. I have found that they need frequent, constant upkeep before they become very rutted, very unusable. And we're not just talking about bicycles. We're talking about strollers, wheelchairs. As you noted, rollerblades would never work on this type of surface. As far as cost and how that... Hey. A major part of the design and construction costs, I think, are going to be related to the road crossings and the bridges. And in that respect, there won't be any difference between the two different surfaces. So I'm not really sure how this is going to be that much cheaper than a paved option. And finally, the fact that a paved option... the state and federal, we will be reimbursed for some of the cost of that. If we go with this scheme, we will be paying all of it up front ourselves.
Okay. Who else wishes to be heard? This gentleman right here. You're next.
I'd like to thank Mr. Sullivan for his... I'm sorry, my name is Eric Trubenbach, Fire Firecut Lane. I feel for Mr. Sullivan, and I feel about the delays as well, and he did that very eloquently. Like the previous speaker, I've been on a lot of rail trails inside of Massachusetts, and both stone dust, paved and unpaved. There is a rail trail as an excellent example of this. Down goes from... Milford to Holliston. Half of it is paved, half of it is not. The paved part is full of people with strollers and on foot. The unpaved part is empty. In the middle of Holliston, there's a little bit where people will venture half a mile down the rail trail. The rest of the time, there's nobody there. To me, it seems like an unpaved trail is a lot like having no trail. And I'm not really willing to spend $1 million on no trail. So I would seem that if you wanted to not have a rail trail and be willing to spend money to not have a rail trail, this would be a way to do it. But in the meantime, I think even though I share Mr. Sullivan's frustration, I think we have to wait for the paved one.
Thank you, sir. This gentleman right here in the second row, the white shirt, can we get him a mic, please? Thank you.
Jim Gish, 35 Rolling Lane. I'm willing to be patient to wait for a better trail. I have some of the same comments, so I won't repeat them as the previous speakers. But if you want to see what one of these looks like, you only have to walk as far as Friendly's and take a look at the stone dust path that's along there. I stopped by there last Monday morning on my way to work and walked part of the trail. And, you know, this is relatively new. Now, it might not have all of the erosion controls that are planned. I don't know what those are. But it's been given kind of a crew cut. But you can see the weeds that have grown up, the grass patches that have grown up. There's lots of holes, lots of ruts. You know, it's certainly not going to be good for road bikes or any other small-wheeled kind of recreational people with wheelchairs, you know, I think they would be, you know, have a rough time on this. If the lighting were flat, if it was at night or other flat lighting, you'd be hard-pressed to see some of the holes and ruts, and I think so there's a safety concern concern there. So if you have a mountain bike and you don't mind hitting the potholes, then it's fine. But that excludes a lot of other uses. I think maintenance is an issue. It's not like we're going to spend $1 million and that's the end of it. In order for this to be usable, even from its initial condition, which I doubt will be all that great, it's going to require more money to maintain it. So this isn't the end of the money. So in terms of environmental impact, I don't know. I'd be interested in hearing more about that. But we're talking about a very small percentage of Sudbury land area when you compare it to paved roads, walkways, and parking lots. So I don't buy that. So I urge defeat.
Thank you. Anybody wish to be heard in favor of the article? Who wishes to be heard in favor of the article? This gentleman right here.
Hello, Ben Parker, 25 Barber Road. I've been a longtime resident of Sudbury. Been here since, 1980. Went off to college and came back. I will tell you that I actually grew up playing on portions of this rail trail, specifically the next article. I was going to save my comments for then, but I want to make sure that there is a perception here that right now, if the vast majority of the people in this room wanted to go use the trails, which I do today, it is very difficult to use. Only pretty much the most physically capable people can go use the trails today. And almost all of the activities that people are concerned about, which I do consider probably less than 10% of the people would actually use, would absolutely not be able to use the trails in the conditions that they are today. So in the concept of I currently take my kids back there now, and it is difficult and cumbersome, it would be much nicer to start seeing a safe trail with great crossings in the near term in a cost-effective manner. I will concede that I am new to town meetings, but in the few that I've shown up to, typically we are a very cost-conscious group of people, it seems like. And so in this, I do think that we've got a great proposal here that is both cost-effective and timely for the next 10 years gaining value, and we are not against paving the trail in the long term under, obviously, different work streams.
Okay.
So that's what I like to say. Thank you.
Thanks. Anyone else wish to speak in favor of the article? In favor of the article? This gentleman right here.
Sid Bourne, Northwood Drive. We frequently use the trail through Lexington, Arlington, Bedford, which is paved, and the Minuteman Park, which is stone dust. We find both of them heavily used, very pleasant. To have people say that stone dust trails are not used, Minuteman Path belies that argument because that gets a lot of use. We enjoy them both, so I encourage getting the stone dust first and getting the paved later when we can.
Okay, I'm going to recognize Mr. Simon.
Could you put up the for Article 55, my first presentation? You? Who else? Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Len Simon, Board of Selectmen, 40 Meadowbrook Circle. There's been some discussion about what a stone dust path looks like and what a paved trail might look like. This is a stone dust path that was put down just about a little more than 2 years ago. You can see the erosion and the rutting. This is on the Upper Charles between, it was put down in 2004, a little more than 2 years later. This is what it looked like. Have the next slide, please. This is another stone dust path in Minuteman National Park, which was just discussed. This trail is about 17 or 18 months old, and you can take a look at the erosion, which has developed on that path. And one more slide. This is the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, which has been paved. This is about roughly 3 years into its existence. Pretty good shape. Last year at town meeting, I presented the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail article that you approved and which has made solid progress. The Sudbury Greenways, as it's been proposed here, has nothing to do with Sudbury or the town government. It uses the term, the word Sudbury and greenways. May I mention something just about the cost which has been presented to you? Mr. Sullivan is asking for $1 million. Just last year, Sudbury Greenways said it could build both the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail and the Mass Central, all 9.2 miles of that, all inclusive of crossings and so on, for $125,000. Now, the same trails will cost $2 million, 16 times that prior estimate. These so-called concept cost estimates come from Beta Engineering, a firm which gave them for free in the hopes of getting eventual engineering work from Sudbury Greenways. The Mass Department of Transportation, which will build the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail at no cost for construction to Sudbury for about $6.6 million, does not use Beta Engineering. The flyers that were in your mailbox made several claims about stone dust. First, they will be Americans with Disability Act compliant. Maybe the day they are put down, but when this type of stone dust was put down in Danvers, these trails became non-ADA compliant within a few months due to erosion and rutting. They also say they will have pedestrian bridge crossings. That was explained to you. They're pedestrian bridge crossings because an ambulance will not be able to cross those bridges. So, and there are two on the Bruce Freeman and two on the east-west. So in an emergency, the ambulance will have to go the long way around to reach the injured person, which would delay medical help just when seconds count. This will be cutting corners on safety. All of the committees in town which have heard this proposal have turned it down for their reasons. If I can have my first presentation, please. Thank you. There's been discussion about what has happened in Sudbury in the past year and a half or 2 years. In the past 18 months, since the Board of Selectmen approved a MassDOT standard rail trail, there has been tremendous progress. First, the state accepted the project initiation form in the fall of 2014. Sudbury Community Preservation Committee approved design funds, town meeting approved funding for the design for a MassDOT standard trail. We've had months of work by VHB, the engineering firm hired by the town to do all the engineering work on the Bruce Freeman. The VHB has met with residents, and that was in late January, early February, for an update on the progress and the process which is involved. There's been field work already in the wetland delineation and the surveying.
How much more time do you need, Selector?
I got about 2 minutes.
You got it.
Thank you. On March 19th, the Massachusetts Project Review Committee approved the full $6.6 million funding for eventual construction of the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail. In the past, when funding is requested, it seems it will be 10 years out. However, what has happened on the Bruce Freeman north of us in Acton, in Concord, Chelmsford, Carlisle,
is that once approved, once a project is approved and the initial funding is granted, the funding process actually accelerates onto the tip. So now we are told by Mass DOT that this project may actually begin in 2019 or 2020 in Sudbury for construction. It does not seem this is a year, 10 years away at all. Other issues. If Sudbury were to approve this proposal, we would forfeit the $260,000 we are contracted for with VHB for their initial design study. If stone dust were put down at our expense, it would have to be taken up at our expense because pavement cannot simply be put down over stone dust. Most importantly, if Sudbury approves the Greenways proposal, the Mass Department of Transportation, which will build the trail for us, may simply say to Sudbury, if you want a soft surface rolled stone dust trail and you want to pay for it, go ahead. We have other communities that would be glad to have us build a paved rail trail for them at no cost. Sudbury, you can go your own way. You're off on your own. In that case, Sudbury would never get the MassDOT standard rail trail the town voted for last year. Abandoning our progress and going back to the drawing board for a more costly, non-paved trail that will probably not happen any faster just does not make sense for Sudbury. Finally, walkways or sidewalks, whatever have you, are paved for a reason and not stone dust, because pavement lasts, stone dust does not.
Thank you, Mr. Simon.
Thank you, Mr.
Who
Margaret.
Wants to be heard in favor of the article? I'd like to take a comment in favor of the article. This gentleman right here.
David Mazin, 56 Butler Road. Mr. Simon, Selectman Simon, I should say. Two questions for you. First question, do you have any documentation or formal analysis that says it's going to happen sooner? I typically see these things happening longer, takes longer. And my second part of my question is, do you have any pictures of the roads, of the other parts of the rolled stone dust trails that you showed, rather than select pictures, which obviously are points of data that doesn't show the whole picture?
Okay, so the question, sure. Selectman, is do you have an understanding or documents that support the timeline, and do you have any pictures that support?
To answer your question, as far as the financial support, yes, I do have the document from Mass DOT. This was the committee which approved it, and on March 19, 2005, the Project Review Committee approved the full $6.6 million for funding. Actually, the federal participating construction cost was $6.9 million. And I'm speaking now that this is the document. However, I'm speaking from experience on the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail in communities north of us, which started long before us, which expected it would take 10, 15 years for that to get done. And the experience is, no, the projects are accelerated, not decelerated. And your second question was, do I have pictures of stone dust? Mr. Sullivan was kind enough to show you some selected pictures of a good condition stone dust trail, perhaps right after it was installed. I'm sure some of it new, when it's put down new, it looks great. After a while, not so good.
Okay. Mr. Stein, you've been waiting patiently.
Hi, Bob Stein, 7 Thompson Drive. Mr. Thompson, could you pull up Andrew Sullivan's, one of his slides called Conceptual Cost Estimate? While he's doing that, I'll make another point. What there isn't in the, I'm against, vehemently against both proposals, and for the same reasons. There was a rail trail in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Mudslide from rail trail sinkhole ruptures East Hampton's primary water discharge line. $400,000 to repair East Hampton's rail trail. And Norwatuck Rail Trail won't be completed until while crews address block culvert erosion. $400,000, same amount of money. What Mr. Sullivan doesn't have in his estimates is contingencies for problems. And this is, Sudbury has a lot of water, as we all know, and I wouldn't want to build whatever the cost he claims to be, and then we have heavy rains, and now we have culvert problems, $400,000 in damage. But most important thing is this conceptual cost estimate I have a problem with. I don't see the name of the company that gave us that estimate. I don't see anybody that put their name on the line for that estimate. I would not undertake a $2 million project without a true licensed engineering firm or any firm putting their name on the line for the estimate. And I don't think anybody in this hall would hire a contractor to do work on their home without a written formal estimate of $2 million. So I just have a problem with who made up this estimate. Was it from the thin air? And why isn't this person putting their name and reputation on the line for this estimate? I would hate to start both projects of $2 million and find out, oh, we made a mistake, and it's now only one-third of the project done, and then they come before the town next year and say, we need another $2, $3, $4 million to complete the project because the estimates that we had, well, that was just a, I hate to use the word, suck you into voting yes on this project. So in my humble opinion, unless it's from a licensed, qualified engineering firm that wants to put their name and reputation on the line to say it is truly going to cost $1 million, I would vehemently tell you to vote no on both projects. As well, thinking forward, NSTAR for number 55, because I might not be acknowledged for 55, the problem I have with both trails is they're going to be free. They potentially, both of them will be free. One might be a little later, like this one, when the state pays for it. But again, it's not free because through our taxes, we're paying for it ultimately. But on the east-west, NSTAR has told us that they might have an interest with that trail in laying underground wires, possibly. And they will provide, which they've stated, that rail trail free of charge, a paved trail. And that could be as soon as 1 year from now. NSTAR has informed us that they're going to let us know by the end of the year if they're going to do the east-west trail with underground wires. They, quite frankly, realize they're not going to be allowed, we won't allow them to put overhead wires. So their only option is basically underground wires. So all I'm saying is for 55, let's wait 6 or 7 months to find out if NSTAR is truly going to put the underground wires, because they promised us this free trail.
Are you talking about 55 now?
Yeah.
That's next. Okay.
Well, we'll jump the gun in case you don't acknowledge me.
We'll get to that.
So I would tell you both, unless there's a legitimate proposal, legitimate company putting their estimates on the line, these are made-up numbers.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I'm going to recognize Mr. Sullivan. I heard the call of the question. I'm going to recognize Mr. Sullivan.
Again, Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road. So to address a couple of Mr. Stein's concerns, the first component associated with cost, so we're talking about $1 million ask and an $800,000 estimate. So I see 20% there, or 200K available in unforeseen costs. Additionally, the actual conceptual cost estimate has 62.5 in it in terms of a contingency. So Beta Environmental Engineering clearly thought that they could handle any surprises that they had not seen while being in the right-of-way and conducting their due diligence for the estimate. In terms of the estimate itself, there is a cover letter on Beta Environmental Engineering's letterhead describing these two proposals on the Sudbury Greenway's website. It's been up there for a couple of days. We have given that that memo saying here are the two conceptual cost estimates from Beta to planning and development. Jim has had a chance to review that. So I don't think there should be any question that the conceptual cost estimate is coming from Beta Environmental Engineering, that they are about 150, 200-person large regional engineering firm that is created both greenway style as well as Mass DOT or engineered greenway style and Mass DOT style trails. They have vast experience in it. The estimate was done by a principal at the firm who's a vice president and a licensed engineer.
Okay. A couple more. This gentleman right here.
Hi, Matthew Lazowski, Hollow Oak Drive. First off, this is my second town meeting. I spoke to Andrew, my first town meeting, sat next to him. The spirit that this article is based on is why I love this town. And it's obvious that there's some good intentions here. I have, as I mentioned, last town meeting, I have 17 years in parking transportation experience, and I have done hundreds of projects from inception to completion with engineers' estimates doing parking facilities, but any project is frankly the same. My concern with this is not in concept, because I think our town can benefit whether it's paved or if it's a dirt road. I don't have a fight, a dog in that fight, but what is important to me is doing a project properly, and I have 17 years of experience, and I have to say that this is a conceptual estimate, but when a developer commits hard money from investors, and we're the investors, that you actually need clear, precise, and identifiable costs from inception to completion, and then afterwards, cost of ownership and maintenance. And the only thing I see wrong with this presentation is not the intent per se, but the stage that it's in and asking for $1 million of taxpayer money prior to getting those funds. And so what I would suggest is if getting hard costs, because cost of ownership is a major concern of any project down the road, and it can derail any good intentions one had at the beginning of a project when more money has to be taken from the investors or asked, which are all of ours. So that's something that I would think we all would want to consider prior to voting yes or no. That's something we want to risk. So my specific point to you, Andrew, is I've done projects for a long time, and the work that you've done is clearly time-consuming, very detailed-oriented, and has incredible intent. I would personally offer you my help in identifying some of those costs if you're interested, but I would say today that I unfortunately can't support the request for this capital expense based on the financial numbers presented.
Okay. For the purposes of informing the hall as to whether or not we should continue debate, how many folks have information that they want to share that's new on this article? Okay, so for the benefit of the hall, we've got about a half dozen folks, maybe a few more, that say they'd like to speak and offer some new information. The question's been called. In order to call the question, I need it has to pass by a two-thirds vote. All those in favor of calling the question, please raise your cards. All opposed? Okay, it passes by well more than two-thirds. We're on to a vote. This requires a majority in order to pass. And so all in favor of the motion under Article 54, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed? The motion fails to attain a majority and therefore fails. Article 55, engineering and construction of a completed greenway-style multi-use recreational trail in abandoned rail right-of-way on the Mass Central Railroad, now known as the Mass Central Trail Wayside Branch. Mr. Sullivan for a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Move to appropriate the sum of $1 million to be raised by taxation for the purpose of engineering and construction of a completed unpaved greenway-style multi-use recreational trail in the abandoned rail right-of-way of the Mass Central Railroad, now known as the Mass Central Rail Trail, MCRT-Wayside Branch, running from the Wayland Town Line to the Hudson Town Line, and contingent upon the approval of a Proposition 2.5 capital expenditure exclusion in accordance with Mass General Law C-59-21C. And a half.
And, yes, and a half. Does that receive a second? It does. Mr. Sullivan.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Again, for the record, Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road, and the founder of Sudbury Greenways. Okay, so Article 55, building a greenway in the Mass Central Rail Trail. Here's the map of the Mass Central. It's a little bit better than the maps I had for the Bruce Freeman. This is provided by DCR and was part of a lot of the effort that they undertook to prep towns to be able to build greenways in the Mass Central, given that they don't have any funding. So we've got a nice map there for you showing the culverts and the bridges and road crossings. This is a blown-up map. It's the purple line. You can see kind of going in the same direction as Route 20 east-west. Again, this is the same picture that you saw of the Stone Dust Path. And these are the same benefits of a greenway in the Bruce Freeman as they are in the Mass Central. I think we'll certainly be promoting healthy living and outdoor recreation. It'll make our town a lot easier to get around, and we'll be able to access all of our assets much better. And we will see a benefit to our real estate values in the long term. Going back to what it is and what it isn't and how the project would work, it would be done in compliance with Mass DEP best practices for rails-to-trails projects, the Americans with Disabilities Act compliance, have safe road crossings, built a manual of uniform traffic code standards, be permitted by Sudbury CONCOM, and have the same 10-foot-wide surface and the same 2-foot-wide shoulders with pedestrian bridges as discussed. Same reasons that they were good for the Bruce Freeman, they're good for the Mass Central. Highly cost-effective in the near term. We can use design-build, which also assists in time and cost reduction, and we can recycle the steel salvage value, which typically is not done on the other trails. So greenways now, paved bike paths later. I'm hoping that maybe there's a better opportunity to agree upon that with the Mass Central, given that we don't have a plan for it. September of 2014, at special town meeting, I put forth two non-binding resolutions, both which passed overwhelmingly, one for a phase one, one for the entire Mass Central. At December 2014, it was put forth that the goal should be a long-term paved path from Mass Central. Late last month, the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee did vote in favor of the Mass Central Rail Trail Greenway, obviously one of the few committees in town to do so, so I appreciate that. So let's install the trail we can have now, a greenway, and continue to work on the opportunity for a paved trail that another entity can pay for. So is there funding for a paved bike path on the Mass Central? The answer is no. At last year's December non-binding resolution, it was proposed that the Patrick administration had a line item on their budget for such a trail. That wasn't the case. There's no state funding that I am aware of and that anyone that I've talked to is aware of. Transportation officials are saying that state funding for rail trails is tight. I would think particularly given that we're going to be getting state funding for the Bruce Freeman, it would be a long line to get to the back of if we are able to secure funding for the Bruce Freeman. So DCR has sent Planning and Community Development a letter October 4th saying thanks for looking into the greenway option. Here's what you need to build the greenway, need to do to build the greenway. We are covering all of DCR's requirements in the $700,000 conceptual cost estimate. Wayland has approved funding for the same exact type of trail. They have approved funding with the help of the same exact engineering firm that Sudbury Greenways has gotten the unpaid help for. And they are moving forward rapidly, and I believe their work will start in a matter of months at this point now that they have funding. So we're really duplicating the efforts of the Friends of the Mass Central Rail Trail in Wayland, and hopefully can get the same result. Same landscape in terms of these funds are very hard to come by. We've got a large deficit here in Massachusetts. We've got a large national deficit, and we're competing with other less fiscally sound communities for transportation and rail trail dollars. So I think this is an opportunity to Sudbury to lead, to take control of our own destiny, and this would be a great first step, once again, for the town. There was some discussion by Mr. Stein in terms of NSTAR and an opportunity that might exist there to get a free rail trail. I think some explanation is needed. NSTAR and National Grid are competing for a reliability project between by a large sitting board, the Energy Facilities Sitting Board in Massachusetts. So it's 50-50 that NSTAR is even in the picture. If they are, they're looking at three projects. One is above ground, 100-foot high-tension wires in the Mass Central Rail Trail right-of-way, which is quoted at $46 million, or they think they estimate $46 million. They estimate undergrounding in the Mass Central to be $117 million, or if that doesn't work out, undergrounding through the streets between Sudbury and Hudson at $136 million. Sudbury has indicated that they are not for high-tension lines going through that right-of-way. I don't think the abutters would be particularly happy. So we're very concerned that even entertaining this type of discussion is going to further bog down rail trail priorities in Sudbury. The town has encountered a number of serious issues with NSTAR on the south side of town in terms of unauthorized tree cutting. I don't think there's that great of a relationship there. The email that I've looked at goes on to say that there's no free rail trail from NSTAR. There's the willingness to potentially share in the costs of a paved rail trail. So what we're going to be asking NSTAR to do is underground an additional $71 million and build us a rail trail. That's what the NSTAR lines look like in Wayland. I don't think we're going to want that. That's what utility lines look like above a paved bike path. I'm not sure we're going to want that. Here is the conceptual cost estimate from Beta Environmental Engineering, again, with a cover letter where they have provided it. A vice president and principal at the firm has done this work. They've been out in the right of way. They've certainly are willing to have me put their name alongside of their estimate. Again, the conceptual cost estimate. We're doing the exact correct thing in terms of the progression of these estimates, in terms of conceptual cost estimating. We're trying to get a likely no-go, or go or no-go, rather, and make an appropriation of funds decision, and that's what conceptual cost estimating is. Again, $157 a trail at an average assessed cost of $658,000 in Sudbury. I think that would be a great investment for all of us as real estate property owners. Again, to quote the Rails to Trails Conservancy, and I'll truncate this in a little bit, in national surveys, consumers have repeatedly chosen trails and walkability as desired neighborhood amenities, boosting local real estate values. So my question is, what are we waiting for? In this case, there's no competing vision that's funded. There's no doubt this will be much more than a decade on the Mass Central. Just given our history, if you look at it in the Bruce Friedman, I would love for us to be able to use this trail next year. Again, everyone can use greenways. There's no doubt that they are ADA compliant. There can be arguments that they degrade or something along those lines, but I wouldn't be standing here today if it wasn't the letter of the law and the fact that the engineering firm can say it and the DCR can say it, that we can build it that way, to me means it's ADA compliant. If there's another bar beyond ADA compliance that we want to hold our trails to, then that's something that we should speak to, but it's absolutely ADA compliant. Lastly, you can use a thin-wheeled road bike on it. You just need to slow down. There's no evidence that, it's unusable to the thin-wheeled road bike user, and I think most thin-wheeled road bike users also own a recreational bike, either a hybrid bike or a mountain bike for a lot of their family rides. So I don't know why we would have an all-or-nothing approach to this particular trail, given that there's no other funding option. Thank you very much, and please consider voting for Warren Article 55.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Mark Manassian for the Finance Committee.
The Finance Committee did not recommend approval of this article. The vote was 3 in favor of the article and 5 opposed. We had a pretty good discussion about this article, but in the end, the majority felt that they voted against this for two reasons. One, they'd like to see this get fully vetted by the CPC, and the second one is they felt that this year there were just too many capital funding requests going before the taxpayers, and this would just add to that burden. So the vote, as I said, the vote was 3 in favor and 5 opposed.
Mr. Woodard for the Board of Selectmen.
The Board of Selectmen was split 2-2. No decision.
Ms. Gossels for the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. Can we get a mic down to Ms. Gossels, please? Just a minute, sir. Just a minute. I'll get to you in a minute.
Jamie Gossels, 11 Spiller Circle, member of the Capital Improvement Advisory Committee. The Capital Improvement Advisory Committee voted to support Article 55 by a vote of 3-2. Those in favor acknowledged general town sentiments for supporting expeditious building of rail trails in Sudbury. They appreciated that this trail would connect to a similar recreation trail to be built in Wayland and didn't believe that other sources of funding for this trail are likely in the near future. Those opposed were concerned about the proposed design-build approach, as well as the stone dust surface. Further, there was concern that consideration of these trails by our committee was taken out of order at the last minute. There was not full due diligence review, and we weren't able to appropriately prioritize these projects among all the projects presented to us.
Okay, discussion. The gentleman right in front of you, Ms. Gossels, would you like to make a comment, sir? Just a minute. Get a mic.
Okay.
State your name and address.
My name is Henry Cavuto. I live at 338 North Road in Sudbury. I was just looking at the raw steel that's been laying in the ground for years could be a salvageable and very associated with helping the cost of bringing down the cost of the price. Has anybody ever thought about that?
Would you like to address that, Mr. Sullivan?
Sure. Thank you for your question, Mr. Cudo. So the answer is yes in both the right of ways, and speaking to Mass Central right now. DCR has stated to the town that we can have the steel salvage value, and that steel salvage value is backed out of that construction estimate. So they've already, as of a few weeks ago, the last update to the estimate, they've already updated it for the current value of salvageable steel. It's gone down quite a bit as the economy in China has peeled back a little bit, but that's an accurate representation of all of the steel in the Mass Central being, if you will, backed out of that price.
Who else wants to be heard on Article 55? Sir, right here. Please shut off your cell phones.
John Seeger, 26 Whispering Pine Road. In the previous article, we saw photographs of deteriorated stone ground trails. I have not heard anyone mention maintenance. Is it possible, for example, that compacting after a year or so could remove any potential ruts and potholes?
Mr. Sullivan, would you like to address that?
Yeah, I think that the full compaction takes place at the time of installation. The most critical component of a good stone dust greenway and one that's long-term and functional and doesn't rut is proper engineering and stormwater management, so we're not getting these runoffs. A number of the pictures that you saw of the stone dust trails that had runoff issues had large slopes associated with them. I'm not even sure they were rail trail conversions. It was an unusual picture to look at, but the vast majority of these right-of-ways are extremely flat and linear. So when we do the proper engineering, which most stone dust paths are not properly engineered because they're done effectively for free, we've layered on hundreds of thousands of dollars of engineering to make sure that this remains ADA compliant and that it's built to a high quality. So while I don't think it would be recompacted annually, I think we'd get what we were looking for in the first shot, and then the annual maintenance costs would be minimal, would be able to be done by volunteers or perhaps some help from DPW.
Okay. The left rear section of the hall has been rather shy tonight. So, yes, sir, right there. Can you give that gentleman a mic? Thank you.
Bill Cooper, 11 Cedar Creek Road. Would you please tell us specifically what the expected value is of the recoverable steel rails and how that will be applied to the million-dollar cost?
Do you have any estimate on that, Mr. Sullivan?
I don't have the current steel salvage value. I can point you to the line item in the conceptual cost estimate, which is the removal of the steel, the wooden ties, and the regrading. So you get that all that stuff taken out, which has to be taken out anyway, as well as the regrading for a very low value. I forget what it is off the top of my head. Let me pick it. It's $75,000, when typically that would be $250,000. So that's where you're finding the steel salvage value, and we would obviously be getting whatever the current market value is. But I don't have that math. That's done inside of the conceptual cost estimate.
Anyone else in that area interested in speaking? This woman right here, can you get pass that mic down, please?
Jennifer Pincus, 25 Blueberry Hill Lane. Two things that haven't really been talked about. You talked about the schedule. You keep saying it's going to be, we'll be able to use it next year, but I haven't seen any schedule from the engineer, from the consulting firm. So we talk about all these engineering things that have to be done to make sure it's designed properly so that we won't have maintenance issues. That's going to take time. You're not going to get this thing built in a year with that kind of engineering study that needs to be done.
Okay, thank you. Those brave souls that sit in the middle of the auditorium, is there anyone here in the middle that wants to be heard on Article 55? Yes, ma'am, right there. Can we get a mic in there, please?
Ada Vasilovsky, 40 Singletary Lane.
I'm sorry, can you say that one more time, please?
Is the mic not on? You just I can't understand my name.
Sorry. Yeah. You just said it a little quickly, that's all.
Ada Vasilovsky, 40 Singletary Lane.
Thank you.
The town has voted many times for support of rail trails. As has been mentioned, there's also support to do them in an expeditious way. In the case of the East-West Trail, without any funding on the horizon, it makes sense to explore our options. That said, when I think of exploring our options, I think that being expeditious doesn't necessarily mean that we shortcut all the steps to figure out what's the best choice. The one thing that I've heard is, or it seems to be thought, is that the only expeditious way to do this, if we were to do it with town funds, is to do stone dust. However, our neighbors to the east in Wayland, when they did their estimates, they also looked at doing paved as an option. In that case, it was $120,000 per mile incremental cost. That aligns to what the Rails to Trails Conservancy also estimates. And along with that, the Rails to Trails Conservancy has estimated that stone dust needs to be repaved twice as often as paved, so that overall the cost of ownership is actually cheaper to do paved. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that we should go for paved, but I think what is important is actually to follow up on the staff's recommendation at the January 2015 rail forum that we had in town to do the work to do design bids with engineering firms that would help us see what are the different options, what are their pros and cons, what are the costs, what are the environmental implications of each choice, what are the trade-offs in terms of usage, and have public forums in the town with that information where we can then be informed and decide between those choices what makes sense. They put a schedule, which is posted to our town website, where that process added 6 months to a year to getting to the point where we can build. To me, that's a perfectly welcome trade-off. I'm willing to add another 6 months to a year in this process in order to feel that we've done our diligence and that everybody has an opportunity to hear what the trade-offs are and make our own choices.
Thank you. Ms. Rupenian.
Kirsten Rupenian, Harness Lane. Can you hear me? Do you mind if I turn around and face the audience?
Whatever
Thank
you.
I actually have, and Andrew, I'm not turning my back on you. I apologize. I actually have a couple of practical questions and a few comments. A few months ago, and I believe it was at one of the forums for the Bruce Freeman, I mentioned a very small but active community here in Sudbury, and that's the horseback riders, and I'm a part of that horseback riding group. We ride out in the Hot Brook. We're very good stewards of the area. We see things, and we tell people what's going on. And we asked the Bruce Freeman people, VHB, to please include us in the planning process so that we might have some use of the Bruce Freeman rail trail when it gets put in. I would ask the same thing if the greenways would go forward, because when you said tonight, Andrew, that the greenways for everybody, I didn't see anything about that kind of a thing. And I know most people don't want to go riding horses on greenways, but I actually ride in the Hot Brook, and that's as green as it gets. So that was one thing. The other thing is, I also said at the Bruce Freeman discussion that I live I have a unique situation in my house. I live on a path that leads from Fairbanks School, when the kids were going home from Fairbanks School, through all the way to the lake section. And that cuts across about several properties in the area, and I happen to live on that. And over the 20-some-odd years that I've lived in Sudbury on that path, we've had issues, and I brought them up then, and I'm going to bring it up tonight because I think people really need to understand what happens when you have a trail. We have people walking their dogs, walking their children, riding their bikes, riding their motorcycles, riding their snowmobiles, and oftentimes they would decide that they couldn't go through there, so they would go around in my yard. We had teenagers come and jump on our trampoline with black hoods and scare the bejesus out of my children. We've had dog issues. We've had poop thrown in our yard. We finally had to put up a fence at a cost to us. So anybody who's planning on living on a rail trail had better be ready to put up a fence, because it is imperative, especially if you have dogs. So I'm actually not in favor of any rail trail for that particular reason. However, having said that, some of the questions that come up when Andrew was talking today is the safe road crossings. I count 5 crossings on, I'm not sure if it's this one or the other one, but there are several road crossings that were mentioned. And the one on Peckham, and I don't think it applies to this one, but some of these road crossings are very dangerous. If a car comes flying around the corner and people are crossing the street and they're not paying attention unless there's blinking lights, which I see in Arlington, there could be a problem. And I think that really needs to be addressed from both proponents of any trail. The other question I have for this is, who would be the program manager? Would that be the DPW? Have they agreed to that? And then what has this, what other projects that are waiting and have been waiting in line are going to get pushed back through the line over the course of the year? So if you've been waiting for funding for a particular pet project and this comes in front and it leapfrogs, then what projects are going to be put away and they're going to have to wait and they're going to lose traction? The other thing, and finally, this is my final thing, I promise. We just failed an article a few weeks ago, or a few days ago, seems like months, asking to put $200,000 into an OPEB account to pay back our $19 million liability. We did not pass it at this town meeting. So if we can fail to put $200,000 into an account where we have to pay back $19 million, why are we even talking about spending $1 million on a rail trail, and why are we even talking about it if we have something that comes up in the schools, which is priority one, as far as I know, in this town? So it's just a question I think we should ask, and that's why I urge defeat.
Okay, there was a question in there about who would own the trail or who would take responsibility.
Who would be the project manager?
Okay. Can you?
So a lead construction. So this is both of these trails were proposed as design build trails, so the design work and the construction are done together, the design work and the couple of months leading up to the construction. So that would planning and development, as well as DPW in all likelihood, through something called a project engineer. So the town would hire their own consultant engineer to make sure they're overseeing the design build and that they have an independent light into operations going on at the trail. It wouldn't be Bill or Jody or Jim going out there. So there is a way to protect the town to make sure that the design build team that is working for the town, that they've obviously done a contract with and playing in development and has spent some time working and developing what are called design build bid documents to make sure that all the obligations are fulfilled, the town would then be enforcing that bid.
Okay, who wants to be heard in favor of the article? Is there anybody who would like to be heard in favor?
Mike, I'll talk.
Right here. Thanks.
Dandy Pompey, 35 Haynes Road. First of all, in the interest of disclosure, I am neither a member of Sudbury Greenways nor a member of the Friends of the Bruce Freeman. I am, however, a 20-year member of the Rails to Trails Conservancy, and I was glad to hear it was mentioned earlier. Just as a point of interest, there's 21,000 miles of rail trails in the United States. Approximately two-thirds of those trails are stone dust, gravel, anything down to wood chips. Approximately one-third are asphalt and concrete. The asphalt and concrete is typically utilized in an urban environment as opposed to a rural environment. I also would like to—I'm going to make a little disconnected here, but there was a comment made earlier about a trail that caved in because it went over a culvert. That was a paved trail, by the way, which was theoretically fully engineered. Those type of accidents happen. It was a number of years ago, too. I'd also like to make a comment about the financing. We have a letter from the Department of Revenue that states pretty unequivocally that community preservation funds cannot be used for this type of an activity. And that's because we don't own this property. This property is all leased. It's leased from DOT or it's leased from MassDOT. Okay, all of those leases have reversionary clauses in them, which makes them, I believe, to legal counsel tonight, in a state at will. You cannot spend CPC money for something that has a clawback provision in it. Okay, so if you spend money for rail trails, you're really supposed to be spending town money, not CPC money. It needs to come out of the tax levy. I'd also like to state that building these rail trails, if you follow some of these communications, okay, the number one issue typically is not pave it or don't pave it. The number one issue is it compatible with the environment? Okay, I give great credit to what Mr. Sullivan has presented, because everything he said is it will be compatible with the environment. Okay, the other rail trail that we're looking at, which really is a right-of-way, I mean, you could build the Bruce Freeman compatible with the environment, but what they're trying to do is stick to the right-of-way that the state has offered, is stick to the right-of-way, and you have significant environmental conflict. So on that trail, they're declaring what's called a sovereign exclusion, which means they have no intention of following Sudbury's bylaws. That will probably be legally challenged. So once again, I give kudos to Greenways, okay, for stating openly that they will follow the bylaws. So I guess I will also say, I have a crushed gravel driveway. It's about 300 feet long. I've had it for 30 years. Gee, it works really well.
And thank you.
Nobody's complained about the ruts coming in. So crushed gravel, in fact, does work. Okay, is it perfect? No. Does it work? Yes. So the question is what is best for the existing conditions? And that includes the finance.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I've heard the call of the question. Selectman Hardy.
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. Bob Hardy, 37 Belcher Drive. I would love to see rail trails in Sudbury paved stone dust. The sooner the better. Sudbury is a lucky community that we have intersecting abandoned rail beds in our town, and they intersect right in town center. It would be a tremendous asset to bring the town together. I would love to see the Bruce Freeman rail trail paved come to fruition sooner as opposed to later. I would love to see the Mass Central rail trail come to fruition sooner as opposed to later. I know Kate Day, the town planner in Danvers. I have corresponded with her extensively about their experience in Danvers. I actually corresponded with her today to get the latest update. The Danvers rail trail was built in 2012. Compacted stone dust. And what Danvers did, they had an abandoned rail bed, and the town didn't want to spend a nickel, so they brought in the Iron Horse Preservation Society. And to some of the questions in the audience tonight, what Iron Horse does is they come in and they take up all the steel and they salvage that, and they retain the value of that steel. And in return for doing that, they take up all the railroad ties, they regrade the path, they reinforce all the crossings so they're safe and crossable, and they put down a compacted stone dust trail, all for the value of the steel. And that's what they did in Danvers, and that's what Danvers decided to do. They said, we've got these trails. If you think of Sudbury, we've got trails, we've got hiking paths, we've got sidewalks, we've got all sorts of paths. Not all of them are paved. Some are, some aren't. But we've got these rail beds, and they intersect, and we've got a lot of mileage, and it could be great. But what Danvers said is, we don't want to spend a nickel, but yeah, we'd like to have a path. We would like to have a usable path where the rail bed is. And Iron Horse came in and did it, and it was done in 2012, and it hasn't cost Danvers a nickel. And to the questions about maintenance, Kate Day has said all the maintenance has been done by volunteers, and the DPW has not spent a nickel. The Danvers DPW has not spent a nickel on maintenance on the Danvers Rail Trail. It was opened in 2012, and this is to date. They've raised privately $50,000 for maintenance for their rail trail in Danvers, and they've spent very little of it. And they are very happy with the work that the Ironhorse Preservation Society did. They have not had, it is a misnomer, they have not had significant issues with their compacted stone dust trail. She says that may be attributed to other towns and other projects, but in Danvers they're very happy, and that's coming from the town planner. Now, the difference between what Danvers did and what Sudbury Greenways is proposing is Sudbury Greenways is proposing, on top of what Danvers did, proposing to spend $1 million of extra engineering and reinforcement that Danvers did not do. So that is the difference between what Sudbury is proposing and what Danvers is proposing. And I would just end by saying I would love to see, and I'm willing to try to broker this, the Bruce Freeman Group and the Sudbury Greenways Group, to all let's just come together and stop, you know, kind of this infighting that I see going on, and just try to work together to make rail trails in Sudbury a reality, because I think it would be a great asset for the community, and I would love to see it happen.
Okay, the question has been called. So for the benefit of the hall on this vote, can you raise your card if you have something new and interesting to say on this debate? Okay, so I see approximately 10 folks, including Selectman Woodard and Selectman Simon. So that should inform your vote on the call of the question. In order for the question to be called, I need a two-thirds majority for passage. All those in favor of the call of the question, please raise your card. All those opposed. Can I see that one more time? All those in favor. All those opposed. Okay, that attains two-thirds, so we're on to a vote. In order to pass, this requires a majority vote. All in favor of the motion under Article 55, please signify by raising your cards. All opposed. The motion fails. It fails to attain a majority.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, before we take up the last article, give me a minute here. Before we take up the last article, I'd like to recognize and thank a few people. First, Marianne Bilodeau and her staff, Patty Golden, Layla Frank, Elaine Jones, Mark Thompson, and many, many other people worked tirelessly over the past several months to organize and prepare every detail of this meeting. Thank you also to the town clerk and town council who made sure that all of our legal P's and Q's were in order at all times. It's extraordinarily helpful for me to have such clear and competent advice over the course of this meeting. I'd also like to thank Myron Fox for all the hours he spent with me leading up to this town meeting. His guidance and counsel were invaluable. And I thank him sincerely for taking the time to pass the gavel to me in more than just a symbolic way. Finally, thanks to you, citizen legislators, for caring enough about your town and its governance to participate in this process. Your passion for the issues and civility toward one another throughout this process has been, in my opinion, exemplary. As is the case with most human endeavors, however, there is always room for improvement. And if anyone has any suggestions about this or future town meetings, you can reach me by email at moderator@sudbury.ma.us. For those who are interested, I intend to convene a working group in the fall to discuss our town meeting and brainstorm on ideas on how to improve it. Anyone interested in participating in that process, please let me know. Town clerk reminds you that there's a special election on May 19th, and that all recently elected or appointed officials should meet the town clerk here at the conclusion of town meeting in order to swear the oath of office. Article 56, refinements to Sudbury's means-tested senior citizen property tax relief. Mr. Tyler for a motion.
Chairman. Ralph Tyler, 1 Deacon Lane, move to indefinitely postpone.
Does that receive a second? Yes, it does. Mr. Tyler, a few pearls of wisdom?
Yeah. First of all, I think we need a round of applause for our moderator.
No clapping.
No clapping. I think it's an extraordinarily difficult job, and he has done it just perfect. So thank you.
Thank you.
You can read in the warrant that there are some things that we might do to the senior means-tested senior exemption. I've been persuaded that the first order of business is to get the extension through the legislature and then see how they're going to do, if they're going to do something statewide to enable the program for other communities which we might adopt. So I think it's not timely to worry about refinements at this time. We've voted already on the extension. Let's get that done. But I think if once that's done, there are some other ideas which are expressed here, which we might consider later as a community. So thank you for passing the motion to send the legislature our home rule petition for extend it, and then we'll talk later. Thank you.
Okay, the motion to indefinitely postpone requires a simple majority to pass. All in favor? All opposed? That passes unanimously. I'll take a motion to adjourn and dissolve this. All in favor? All opposed? Thank you very much.